If you have your Old Testament with you, you might be turning to the book of 1 Kings. We're going to be looking in the 18th chapter this morning. We had a study on Wednesday night where we kind of went through Kings and Chronicles and looked at some of the good kings and bad kings and a few of the events that occurred in that time period. But one of the stories I kind of skipped over that's one of my favorites is the time that Elijah and Ahab kind of had their confrontation, and Elijah and the prophets of Baal. So we want to talk about that this morning. And not only is it a great story, but I think there are a lot of aspects of the conflict and the things that Elijah had to face that really are sort of universal. They're things that come up all the time. And understanding that relationship, I think, can help us as we look at some of the struggles, especially religious struggles, that we're going to face in this life. And if you think about the backstory, the things that happened there, it only had been about 60 years since the kingdom had split. So by the time Ahab becomes king, there have been several dynasty changes already in the northern kingdom. And, of course, the line of David is still going in the south. But Elijah is prophesying now a lot in Israel, in the northern tribes there. And things aren't going great. Those people have kind of left God. When Jeroboam set up the idols in Dan and Bethel, it made this separation where people were easily forgetting God and easily going away from him. And then it just got worse as they began to pick up the other gods of the nations around them, including the god Baal. And so Elijah prayed to God, told Ahab that it was not going to rain for 3 years. And they had a 3-year drought. And things were getting desperate. And at one point, Ahab comes out and he gets some people and says, you got to go one way and look for water. We're going to go another way. And we got to find some water here because things are getting really bad. And at that point, one of the faithful men who's, you get the idea, he's kind of in hiding under Ahab. His name is Obadiah. He encounters Elijah. And Elijah tells him, go get Ahab and bring him out here. And Obadiah is really kind of leery about that. He says, okay. Don't you understand? I've been really faithful, and if I go tell Ahab to come meet you, and you're just going to just disappear into the wind, and then he's going to kill me. He says, no, you go get him, and I will be here. So he's setting the stage for this confrontation. And in 1 Kings, the 18th chapter, beginning in verse 17, it says, when Ahab saw Elijah, Ahab said to him, is this you, you troubler of Israel? And he said, I have not troubled Israel, but you and your father's house have, because you have forsaken the commandments of the Lord, and you have followed the Baals. Now then, send and gather to me all Israel at Mount Carmel, together with 450 prophets of Baals and 400 prophets of the Asherah who eat at Jezebel's table. So Ahab and Elijah meet, and Elijah issues this challenge. Now, a couple things about that challenge. Notice that he makes a distinction here, a very clear distinction about what the problem is. Ahab says, you're the troubler of Israel. Why would Ahab think Elijah was a troubler? Well, they're having a drought and all of these things are going on, and you know, he's going to blame that on Elijah. And Elijah's saying, no. Let's get to the right cause. Let's understand why Israel's having trouble. Israel's having trouble because they have forsaken their God. It's also going to be kind of lonely for Elijah, isn't it? He says, I want you to gather to me all Israel at Mount Carmel. That's all the people. That's the ones that Elijah's really concerned about, is having those people understand who is God and what they should be doing. So that's going to be a good crowd. And he says, I want you to bring 450 prophets of Baal and 400 prophets of the Asherah. So basically, on one side of this equation, in terms of the leadership, they're going to have 950 of these false prophets, and it's just going to be Elijah on the other side. Don't be surprised sometimes if the battles that come up that you may have to fight from a religious nature are very one-sided. You may be the only one who is going to have to stand up for something. You may be the only one in a crowd that could be large that is given the opportunity to stand up for God. And here Elijah is given that as he's going to face this very large crowd. So Ahab agrees. They've got a drought going on, but this sounds like a slam dunk from his perspective, right? maybe we'll finally get rid of this troublemaker, Elijah. And so the challenge is issued. Ahab sends a message among all the sons of Israel and brought the prophets together at Mount Carmel. And Elijah came near to all the people and said, "How long will you hesitate between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal, then follow him." But the people did not answer him a word. Now, I want you to think about that for a second. Elijah is calling into account how long, the time period that it takes them to make a decision. He goes, "How long are you going to hesitate?" Sometimes you get people who feel like they're religiously right, but they might be searching for something. They might be looking. And unfortunately, we don't have forever. This life is kind of limited. And you don't know how long we have. Each of us have known people that have died long before we thought they were going to. The Bible says maybe we get 70 years, right? And I think we've got even people in this audience who've surpassed that number. And it gets kind of scary when you start getting close to it, doesn't it? And yet there's so many other people that never make it even that far. And he asks a simple question, how long are you going to hesitate? Sometimes it's easier to put things off. It's easier to kind of procrastinate, to sort of think that I'll make the decision tomorrow. I'll figure this out later. And Elijah's saying, you know what? There isn't necessarily a later. You need to go ahead and decide this. Because God wants people's decision, not their indecision. He wants them to follow him. And he's got a good claim on it. Elijah has already referenced the prior claim that God had on these people. If you remember in Exodus, the 20th chapter, verses 4 through 6, when the commandments were being laid out, that second commandment, there's some explanation there. It says, "You shall not make for yourself an idol or any likeness of what is in heaven above or on the earth beneath or in the water under the earth. You shall not worship them or serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children on the third and the fourth generations of those who hate me, but showing loving kindness to thousands, to those who love me and keep my commandments." And so this separation that had occurred there, where these people had begun to leave their God and go after Baal, really, you look around you and you see the whole world who really wants to have kind of an ecumenical philosophy, right? Now think about those people who are worshiping Baal. The prophets, some of them, they may have been just deluded. They may have been there just because, you know, it probably paid well, you know. Fine, okay. But there were probably some who really thought that they were serving some god. And the people of Israel that are following after them, yeah, some of them probably had all kinds of not very good motives. But I suspect that there are a lot of well-meaning people who simply were trying not to leave out a god somewhere. They had good intentions. And as we live in this world today, we're going to see that there's a lot of people with a lot of good intentions. But people don't want to make that decision. They don't want to make that choice that gets kind of hard to say, am I really going to follow God? And that's what Elijah is forcing them to come up and confront. The confusion that exists in their world. Is there religious confusion in the world today? I think so. How many religions could you name? There's a lot. Even the media in this country, they talk about the three great religions. They talk about Judaism and Christianity and Islam is the other one that's gotten thrown in recently a lot. And yeah, there's a lot of common ties there. And a lot of things that people will have in common as they start looking at. There's also great divides and great differences. And most of those differences come when people start leaving God's word, when they decide that something they want is different than what God says, and so we'll fudge a little. And the people had begun to leave God here that Elijah is confronting. Now notice there's another thing there. When Elijah calls out to them and says, "How long are you?" It says the people did not answer him a word. In this reading, as we go through, I want you to notice how that is emphasized in a couple places, where who is it that's going to answer? Because Elijah puts out a question, and the people aren't comfortable with a question, and they don't answer. So Elijah says to the people, I alone am left a prophet of the Lord, but Baal's prophets are 450. Now let them give us two oxen, and let them choose one ox for themselves and cut it up and place it on the wood, but put no fire under it. And I will prepare the other ox and lay it on the wood, and I will not put a fire under it. And then you call on the name of your God, and I will call on the name of the Lord. And the God who answers by fire, he is God. And all the people said, that's a really good idea. So he put forward a test, right? He says, we're gonna get a demonstration here. People like demonstrations. This was the visual effects of their day, right? He didn't have a PowerPoint projector, so he wanted to set up two altars, you know, and do something that was a live demonstration. And notice who he's letting do things. He says, you pick the oxes, okay? You know, ever how they want to do that. And you pick and do your thing, and you get to call on God, your God. And then I'll call on my God, and we'll just see how this goes. Now, the interesting thing is, I like that the response is, it's a good idea. You know, a lot of times if people are really interested, and if you can get the right kind of interaction, you can eventually get to a point where people go, oh, yeah, it's a good idea. Let's study about this. Let's look into it. Let's see what's going on. And so quite often, even among those people there who were confused, who didn't know how to answer Elijah, when he makes the right proposal, they're going, oh, okay, let's take a look and see how this goes. Well, they get started, and Elijah says to the prophets of Baal, you choose for yourself first, for you are many, and call the name of your God, but put no fire under it. Then they took the ox, which was given them, and they prepared it, and called on the name of Baal from morning until noon, saying, O Baal, answer us. But there was no voice, and no one answered. And they leaped about the altar which they had made. Now, what does it mean when they're leaping about this altar? Sometimes people want to substitute showmanship for truth. Boy, we've seen a lot of that lately, haven't we? Even our own country. And the answer didn't come right away. And so they're gonna try to impress everybody. Now, what I keep wondering, okay, this is just me, is how many of them were back there with some sort of flint and steel trying to, you know, hide the actions of somebody else as they're trying to get a fire going here. I mean, it's a drought, folks. It should be pretty dry. It should be pretty easy to catch something on fire. And they're jumping all over the place. Can't make it happen. And they did that, it says, from morning until noon. So, you know, give them a couple of hours to get things set up and get this going at like 10 a.m. or so. And by noon, they've had at least a couple of 3 hours to go after this. Now, by this time, I'm wondering about the crowd that's sitting around watching this. Because you see, they got to keep the attention. That's part of the leaping around too. You know, we got to put on a good show, right? You got to keep the crowd interested. And they're watching, waiting, anticipating. Because surely, Baal will answer. And as this crowd is drawn in, watching the others, then you hear Elijah's voice off on the side. Because there might be a spectacle going on, but the real stuff that they're supposed to be seeing, that's not happening. And lest the people get carried away with the spectacle, Elijah pops up about noon and he mocks them and he says, and calling out with a loud voice, for he is a god. Either he is occupied or gone aside or is on a journey or maybe he's asleep and he needs to be awakened. Now, I'm not going to recommend mockery as your normal approach for talking to people. But I think the mocking that Elijah does here has a point, right? He's mocking these 450 people who are putting on this pageant down in front of this altar But his real audience is the people who might be enthralled by this spectacle. Because he's making it clear, they've had 3 hours, folks. Maybe you're not shouting loud enough, right? Let's shout louder. Oh, you know, because maybe Baal's asleep. You know, you never know. Or maybe he's on a journey. He's too far away. He can't hear. Now, each of those things that he's saying is in direct contrast to what is written about the God that Israel should have been following. He never sleeps or slumbers. He is always present everywhere. And so, would God have heard this? As the God that's described in the Bible? Most certainly. But Baal's not hearing it. And again, he cried out with a loud voice, and they cut themselves according to their customs with swords and with lances until the blood gushed out of them. And when midday was past, they raved until the time of the offering of the evening sacrifice. But there was no voice, and no one answered, and no one paid attention. So noon, he mocks them, and they just pick up the pace. And it says they start cutting themselves. And then they start raving about. I mean, these people are now frothing at the mouth almost, trying to get something to happen. Why would they cut themselves? It says it's according to their custom. But I don't know, you know, I have a hard time with blood anyway. I'm not going to be cutting myself or anybody. I'm sorry. You know, it's, if I have to give blood, we might do that at some point. My kids give blood, but even there, my wife knows, just like, don't get around needles in me. I may not even see blood, but needles, yeah, we don't get there. And these people are taking not just little pen knives and pricking their fingers or whatever. They're slicing themselves so the blood's gushing out. They're effectively saying, I am offering my life to Baal in exchange for him answering me. It shows you how dedicated a lot of these people were. But they're dedicated to the wrong thing. And that's very much a part of the life that we have today when we start trying to teach people or look at people or even our own lives perhaps. What are you dedicated to? And are you dedicated to the right thing? What are you willing to do? These people were willing to put their lives on the line for a false god. And it's not getting them anywhere. And I think a lot of what people don't understand is a lot of the activities and things that people devote themselves to are not going to get them anything. And how do we come to understand that and teach that? Except by showing them things like this, where people, well-meaning people, were going the wrong way and doing the wrong things. And so they continued this for the next 6 hours. It's now the time of the evening sacrifice. They've had from morning through the heat of the day down to a point where evening is starting to fall. And you notice that last verse? There's still no answer. So the people couldn't answer. And Baal couldn't answer in the morning. And after hours of this, Baal still has no answer. So it's Elijah's turn. Now, this was interesting because they'd put on quite a spectacle. And, you know, it didn't have to be quite like Elijah did it. It could have been much simpler, but Elijah is going to make a point. So, Elijah said to the people, come near to me. They've been near this other thing. They've been watching the Baal folks. He says, it's my turn. Come near to me. And so all the people came near to him, and he repaired the altar of the Lord which had been torn down. And Elijah took 12 stones according to the number of the tribes of Judah, of Jacob, to whom the word of the Lord had come saying, Israel shall be your name. And so with the stones, he built an altar in the name of the Lord. And he made a trench around the altar large enough to hold 2 measures of seed. And then he arranged the wood and cut the ox in pieces and laid it on the wood. And then he said, fill 4 pitchers with water and pour it on the burnt offering and on the wood. And he said, do it a second time. And they did it a second time. And he said, do it a third time. And they did it a third time, and the water flowed around the altar and filled the trench with water. Now, Elijah's got a little showmanship going too, doesn't he? It's drought. It's dry. Even when they're jumping around and whatever else they had, they couldn't get a fire for anything over in the prophets of Baal. And Elijah says, it's my turn. Now, he takes his time, and the first thing he does is reconstructs an altar. What this tells me is that there was an altar that was there that had been torn down. It was a place on Mount Carmel where a number of events had happened in the Bible, and you can go back and look at several of the interesting things that happened on Mount Carmel, but there was an altar there. The fact that it was torn down means that people had been in this ignoring God and forgetting God in that area for quite a while. And when he built it back up, it says he took 12 stones. He did not want the symbolism of that to escape those people. It wouldn't have surprised me if he weren't calling out the names of the tribes as he put those stones in place. Because those were the tribes that those people were from. He says, I'm talking to you. It was a very personal thing to rebuild this altar. And then, lest they think that there's any suspicious activity going on, in this drought, he says, go get 4 pitchers of water. Now, I'm thinking this was more than, you know, like a little tea pitcher or something, right? This is probably a giant jug. And it's not a big altar. It's only 12 stones. Even if they're fairly large stones, that doesn't give you a huge place. But he's dug a trench around it, and you fill it with water. He says, nah, that's not enough. Do it again. Ah, that's not enough. Do it again. So there's some showmanship here when he builds this up. Now we have soaking wet wood, a soaking wet altar, and everybody's got to be looking at Elijah like, what in the world? This man is truly crazy. But look what happens next. It says, at the time of the offering of the evening sacrifice. So he timed it here. Elijah the prophet came near and said, O Lord, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, today let it be known that you are God in Israel, and that I am your servant, and I have done all these things at your word. Answer me, O Lord, answer me, that this people may know that you, O Lord, are God, and that you have turned their heart back again. And then fire from the Lord fell and consumed the burnt offering and the wood and the stones and the dust and licked up the water that was in the trench. And when all the people saw it, they fell on their faces. And they said, the Lord, he is God. The Lord, he is God. Now, that had to be a shock, didn't it? Because after 9 hours... of 450 prophets of Baal plus the 400 prophets of the Asherah close by doing their thing, Elijah offers one prayer. Did you notice what he said? He said, answer me. Now, the people hadn't been able to answer. And Baal hadn't been able to answer. But who answered? Yeah, God answered that prayer. I think sometimes, even in our prayers, we don't have the expectation of being answered. And that's a big problem with our prayer life. We need to expect to be answered. Now, the answers may not always be what we want. But in this particular case, Elijah knew what the answer was going to be as a prophet of God. He expected that answer. And when it came, it wasn't just a fire that burned up the sacrifice. Did you notice what it said there? This fire came down. It took out the sacrifice. It took out the wood. It took out the stones. It took out the dust and the water that was in the place. So you can almost think of it as this, you know, column of just pyrotechnic display coming down and just annihilating this sacrifice in front of the people. Now, I'm the kind of person that when I'm watching a movie and one of those little scary places comes, you know, my wife is always looking at me like, you're going to jump again. Yeah, I know, I'm going to jump. How many of you think that the people kind of jumped when this happened? This was a demonstration of God's power. We don't necessarily see the same kind of demonstrations these days. But God's power is all around us, and God's power is in His Word. And sometimes I think we let that go, and we don't understand and allow the power of God to affect people like it can. But Elijah here, he's just vindicated at this point. And all of this comes down. It says that it licked up even the water that flowed around the trench. And so his response is when all the people fell on their faces, they knew the response. And they immediately responded. And Elijah says to them, seize the prophets of Baal. Do not let one of them escape. So they seized them, and Elijah brought them down to the brook Kishon and slew them there. So major victory for God on that day. The people understand and saw God. And the call that that Elijah came out, notice how fast they answered it. They didn't wait. They answered the call. Now, I think a lot of times, this goes back to what Elijah had in the very beginning of this when he said, how long are you going to waver? People, we need to understand that when God calls us, when we understand that call, when we see that God has things for us to do, that we have things that we're supposed to do for Him, hesitation isn't the right answer. It's not the right response. Now, you might look at that parable that Jesus had where he was talking about, remember, the laborers going into the vineyard? And there were some that were hired in the morning, and then throughout the day, the master came out again. And so some of that crew was hired pretty late. And they complained about, you know, the early ones complained about getting the same pay, and that's one of the stories there. But have you ever thought about the fact that when he went to those last folks and said, why are you working? Was their answer, we just decided to be lazy today. No, their answer was, no one's asked us. They hadn't been asked yet. Now, what was their response when they were asked? Did they go, well, you know, it's only a couple hours left, and, you know, I think I could pass for today. No, their response was, yes, sir. Show us the path. We'll get there. We'll do some work. So it wasn't the fact that they were reluctant to work. It was the fact that different people are called at different times. And so that's part of what we have to understand, is that the call, when it comes, when we understand what God wants us to do, He's expecting a response, just like Elijah was expecting a response from these people. And the response was expected to be pretty immediate. And so when you look at your life, and you look at, do you need to respond to Jesus? Do you need to look at the call that He has on you? Because just like Elijah said, you know, we got a prior commitment here. The prior commitment was they had a law of Moses that had told them they were not to worship these idols. Well, you know what? Christ has a prior commitment on all of us because He died for us. So He's got the claim. And so you have to decide, are you going to be a part of that? Submit yourself to Him. Or are you going to take more time, be indecisive, wander in the world, and be uncommitted in what you're doing because you're not clear on what you're doing? The answers are here. And if you are ready to take up that and ready to be part of that solution, then we have an opportunity now. Don't hesitate. Take advantage of it. Come now while we stand and while we sing.